This is CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with CRB Ely. Live on Cliff Central.
Welcome to the Threaded Exchange. I'm Siyabonga Beile, live from Johannesburg. And you know, this is what it is. We are culture, progressive and brave. And this is a show where we discuss a lot of things that affect African millennials. And today we've got an exciting show. And before we get to that, enjoy this tune by Majid Jordan titled Make It Work. That is Majid Jordan, titled Make It Work. And I think this song sets the tone for today's show because it's all about making it work, man. As entrepreneurs, as black creatives, all we seek to do is make our businesses work. They come with all different types of challenges. Making it work is quite hard. And today I've got two interesting entrepreneurs in studio. And we're going to have a heated debate about what are the realities of being an entrepreneur in South Africa. I feel like most of the time the focus is always on... It's always on the rise towards being an entrepreneur. So it's all about how do you get funding? It's all about, you know, support my business. Let me get clients. You know, you're out there, you do interviews, you do the PR. Everyone knows about you. But behind the veil, there's a lot that happens. You know, when your business is making money and as a young entrepreneur who doesn't come from money, what happens? Is it easy as it sounds? You know, they say more money, more problems, losing money, gaining money, losing clients, gaining clients. There's a lot that happens in business that I feel most of the time doesn't get uncovered. And in studio, I've got Elliot Sitole and Joe Nawanya. And they are the founders of Creative Mindspace, which is a fast-growing digital company and an agency in South Africa. They do everything from branding, websites. And Joe likes to say that he invents brands and builds brands and dissects brands. Is that true, Joe?
It is. So with what we do is that we're very influenced by our continent, firstly, because we've realized that we're so rich with everything, you know, our weather is different, our people are different, different cultures and languages that we have here. Yeah. And we're just so passionate about using all those elements and pumping them into African brands and making them global and making them appeal and making them communicate differently, you know, with a very strong story. So that's where we invent brands.
That's where Elliot, yeah. How's it, my man?
I'm okay, pa.
You look like a pantsula. You look so cool. This guy is so much sick. Yeah, like, how does this partnership work? Joe is all
He's the rebel.
Serious, nerdy. I would say you look more like the creative, you know.
I can say we the same, you know. But, you know, where I come from in a different space where, like, I'm from Soweto. Yeah. So we met. The way we met is like it was the creative force that made us join. Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt you right there, but I'm too excited to have you guys in studio and I have so many questions that I want to ask you guys. But I think let's start from the beginning. I mean, Joe, you're a 23-year-old entrepreneur from Congo.
I just turned 24, actually.
Turned 24. Oh, I also turned 24. We're getting old, eh?
Yeah, this thing is serious.
This thing of being youth up and coming is getting outplayed. Yeah. Yeah. But Joe, you're a kid from Congo, 23 years old. You have Elliot here, who's from Soweto. How does this partnership come about?
I think, it's about finding your purpose, you know, and almost just letting it happen and believing in the universe and following your intuition, because it was a very weird situation how Elliot and I met, because I was working at a retail company first, and for some odd reason, Elliot was the model who was in the clothing that this company was doing. And I didn't know that this guy was a creative like me, and I was always taking pictures of this guy. Eventually, like the following year, sometime in Feb, I see this guy walks into the same office and I'm like, wait, dude, I know you. He's like, yeah. And we started connecting like that, only to realize that we actually have the same passion and we've got the same vision.
Yeah.
And it's a very difficult thing at first, especially if you want to start a business, because you need someone that understands your vision and has the same passion as you and will understand that, look, dude, we're not going to make money from the first day or the first month or maybe even the first year, but we believe in this, and this is our purpose. Yeah. You know, yeah. So it was that's basically how we just came about.
Yeah, meeting. I mean, I want to touch on something that's quite sensitive, especially within the African space and having traveled African countries. What I like about your partnership, it's not. I mean, of course, I encourage South Africans to collaborate, yeah, but I like that, you know, you're from Congo, you're from South Africa, and you guys are collaborating. And I think at our time, it's very, very important, especially looking at, you know, what has been happening in South Africa in the last 5 years with xenophobic attacks and also like, you know, that kind of energy. And to see young people doing it, it's like you're showing, you know, the example going forward. And I think that's where the future of Africa is. It's not about isolating ourselves as South Africans, being like, oh yeah, we cool, we're down here in the South. But I think the future of Africa lies in collaboration.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy to choose a partner, you know. I always say that people ask, how do you choose the right partner? I say, you know, sometimes you just pray and wait for God to explain how to do your thing, you know. So when I met Joe, it wasn't that thing of, he's from the other side, I'm from this side, you know. It was the connection, and the connection was powerful because we share the same month, almost the same date, you know, of birth. So, like, the connection was very strong. Like, I believe that God said, okay, you know what, this is your partner. Because I tried a lot of people to team up with, but Joe was there, and when we spoke about the idea of we had like creative mind space flip
the name actually just clicked. It just happened.
Why creative mind space?
It's this vision is bigger than us. Why creative mind space? Because we want to establish an ideation agency that will be the hub of African creatives. We want you to walk in and find someone that's amazing in architecture, someone that's amazing with design, someone that's amazing with music, because creativity is not just what we do as designers. Creativity is in everything. Being creative at being a radio presenter, being creative at being a chef, that is your art, you know, that is your skill and your talent, and that is creative, you know. So people think creativity is the guy who paints, the guy who draws. We believe differently from that. So creative mind space, because we want to create that space where creative minds can live, where it could be a hub for them to exist.
Yeah, that is incredible. And, you know, just touching the fact that, like, I like highlighting young Black people who are doing something completely innovative. In the industry, there is a lot of agencies, right? You know, there's your Ogilvy's, and, you know, there's all these different agencies that have just been accepted as the norm. Those are the agencies that people give money to. And I've always been vocal about, you know, everything that's given to us in South Africa, most of the time we don't own it. You know, we don't own the advertising agencies. We don't own a Nike in South Africa. We don't have a Puma in South Africa. And we're always running to work with these global brands, which I don't think is a problem. But I mean, when are we going to build our next Ogilvy's in South Africa? When are we going to build our next Nikes? So what are your thoughts on that? Were you conscious of that when you were starting Creative Mindspace?
Yeah, the whole idea was to create a hub where we get all the creatives in one space, you know, because you find out, like, our people in Soweto especially, they will go and say, I want to create a logo, but the logo is expensive. But I know these creative agents in Sandton, they charge so much, you know. Yeah. So we're like, you know what, we can do this and cater for everyone. So we're the small business or very small business, we cater for everyone. So we're letting people to come and say, you know what, it's possible to start your brand without paying so much. Yeah. You know, I'm not saying that it's bad to go to Sentinel or wherever to ask for someone to design a logo for you. But the fact that you can have your people that you can afford, you know, to start your brand and stuff without paying much. So we were conscious about it, that, you know what, let's start something that's gonna open for everyone.
Yeah,
you know, it's not only about big corporate companies and stuff. So the aim was that.
And also, Sia, just touching on what Elliot said, it was about we wanted to have an agency that was very unapologetic about our history, about our culture, and about our people. You know, we wanted to really go the storytelling route because we're tired of people coming into our continent and experiencing everything that we have and leaving with that experience and telling different stories outside of our country. You know, we wanted to say, guys, we've got all this. Let's own it. You know, let's create things that are from the soil. Let's create stuff that our people, first of all, will buy into and feel proud of, you know, our heritage and our history and our people. So that's where we feel that we didn't want to be like any other agency. We wanted to be an agency that is focused on our storytelling, focused on our narrative.
Because if you look, we're not only about doing corporate stuff also. We do animation and stuff, you know. So what inspires that is that you find it a small kid in Soweto who knows how to draw, who knows how to, but he doesn't know where to go, understand? Yeah. So that person is talented. So what we do is we take that person, we put him in the space where he can express and make money. You understand? Yeah. So the idea was that Creative Mind Space, we create more creative, like we bring more creative people in.
So it's like
space.
A creative hub, and you're also cultivating talent while you're producing this work that you own at the same time.
Yeah.
That is incredible. I mean, you touched on something that I think is quite important. I mean, you said earlier that when you're starting a business, you had this understanding of the first couple of years, you're going to be broke. You might not make money. And people at home might be sitting, or, you know our peers, how they are, you know. Our peers could be sitting at home and be like, we have bills to pay. You're lying. Just because now you've made it, it's easy for you to say. And people don't actually understand that it's actually true, the fact that when you start a business, you go fucking broke. Like, for the first couple of years, you don't realize your profits. You make, you know, you trust clients, they don't pull through, you do pitches, they don't work out, you know, you spend money, you lose money. So, you know, why do you think that a lot of people will then ask at the same time, yo, how we've made it? And we'll always say, like, yo, it's besides talent and besides all the other things we have in our minds, it's also just being patient and understanding that at some point it's got to work. At some point, if you persevere long enough, things will change. And I think a lot of people are still I think in this country, are very fiscally sensitive. We're afraid of losing money. And I feel a lot of young black creatives are stuck in jobs that they do not want because they're afraid of that risk of, yo, I'm going to lose my car.
Exactly.
So how did you guys get over that barrier, or accepting that, okay, you know what, next 3 years we might make money, we might not. Of course we want to make money, but if we don't, doesn't mean we're going to stop. What gave you guys that motivation?
I think the first thing would be understanding, or let me rather say finding yourself, you know, knowing that, look, I've got the skill and I've got this talent or a gift. And one thing that we don't realize is that everything that is instilled within us is not for our own benefit, you know?
Yeah.
So I think for us, or rather for me, it was knowing that, look, this is what I'm meant to do and I should just follow it, you know?
Yeah. Amazing. And in terms of, like, you know, just breaking it down a bit more, when you guys go through those broke months, you know, where you feel like, I can't go to this meeting, I can't afford the Uber to that, or I can't do the, I'm just, those dark moments, so you're like, where you feel like you're so broke, you've hit a roadblock, and you're like, I have a company, but dololo. How do you get through that? I feel like I just want to break it down even further, because people don't understand. People think broke means you're broke, but you've got 10K in the bank. Mm. That's your brokenness. Like, I mean zero in the bank account, zilch. We're just like, fuck. Asinando.
We were actually talking about this, because last year was the worst year ever that we've experienced.
I can relate to that.
In our business. And it was so bad that we would literally live on just buying tin fish and cooking that with rice. We use it as our last resort. We would walk to the office, which is like a 3-kilometer walk in the sun, because we can't afford to get to the office with like Taxify or Uber. You find out that you've got clients that you've been chasing for months, right?
Bro.
And they haven't paid.
And lawyer fees are expensive as
exactly.
well. So some people go after them with lawyers. And you know how much lawyers cost.
Exactly. And people also don't understand that running after a client who owes you is actually you losing time and losing money.
Yeah.
And I think one thing that some of our successful entrepreneurs in the industry are doing is that they're selling a blurred dream. Like, they're not being serious, or rather exposing entrepreneurship at its core, because people only want to share about their successes and their cars and their houses. No one's really telling you that, look, you're gonna go broke, you're gonna get dumped, she's gonna want you back, you're gonna lose this, you know, like you won't have time for family,
you can't go on dates now because now you're like, I need money for the day, you know, and what am I gonna say to this
now there's other people on social media also who are putting pressure on you because the Instagram looks a certain way and all that, and like you trying to live up to that. I think those are some of the things that are happening in society that are really making entrepreneurship seem as if, hey, this thing is cool, you know, I can get along, I'll just start a business and boom, I'm gonna make it. And it's not true. And people always think that if you have a business, you've got money. It's
people don't understand. And also there's this, I think social media has brought this warped sense of reality. So in a sense that social media doesn't reflect real life.
It doesn't.
Sometimes it can. I mean, PDD's life, I feel like what PDD shows us is what, that's his life. He's rich.
Yeah, he worked for it.
I mean, Oprah Winfrey, when she has chefs in her kitchen, that's real. But as an average South African young black entrepreneur, that's not a reality. So there's also, there's this space where you tell people you're broke and then they'll be like, yeah, but your Instagram says this. And Instagram is for work. As creative mind space, you're going to post on your Instagram, oh yeah, we broke this month. You gotta have to keep the brand going. So some of the times people are like, yeah, I checked your Instagram, doesn't seem like you're going through the most, and you're like, am I supposed to post a picture there at home eating my little noodles
crying,
like, yeah, crying, we're broke.
There was this other time we moved to Sunning Hill, and everyone thought we like making it, killing it, you know, we have money for days. So at home they were like, but you guys, you're in Sunning Hill, why are you always complaining that you don't have money and stuff? Like, you don't understand that each and every day we're living, we're chasing clients, and we try by all means to do like great work and stuff, you know. So it's not an easy thing at all. Like, you can see us wearing like nice clothes and stuff, but we're trying to,
And also just building a business from the ground up without funding and everything means that every cent you make goes back towards the business. You know, all the money you make, you're saving up for your next meeting or saving up,
or even debts. That's another thing. There's also debts, like, because now you go through these periods where you're not making money. The rent goes up, the rent doubles, cell phone bills, bills. So when you get that huge amount of money, besides, before you even pay salaries, it's first used to clear out all this debt. And by the time you're left with like 20K, and you're like, okay, let's split this at half as a salary. So there's also those kind of challenges where it's all, that's the crazy thing. I was actually saying to Anga the other day that when you're broke, it's almost as if the world wants you to be broker. It's like
just all these debts just come up.
Yeah, because
cell phone, like, boy, I was thinking,
I was thinking, so listen to this. So like, I went through some crazy shit last year where I also, my company lost a lot of money. I remember now, so my medical aid was so expensive, right? So I'm like, okay, let me downsize, let me cut medical aid. So now I'm like, I want to cancel. They're like, I must pay an extra like 3-4K to cancel. I'm like, but like, but I don't have the money.
That's why I'm canceling.
That's why I'm canceling. Exactly. Yeah, Virgin Active as well. Like, to cancel your membership, you have to pay like R1,000 admin fee. And I'm like, but like, it's so crazy. Like, Virgin, when you don't have money, that's when like the world wants to pay, wants you to pay more, or the system wants you to pay more. And then the crazy thing is, when you have money, you hardly pay for anything.
You do.
Because immediately when you have money, no one calls and stuff. But when you get broke, yo,
like, yeah, all the problems
arise. Like, messages and stuff.
Guys, if you want to join in on the discussion, please don't hesitate to WhatsApp us on 079-748-2090. You can ask us anything that you would like for us to discuss. Are you having issues with your business? Are you having problems? Are you also just hitting that roadblock where you feel like it's the end for you? So please reach out to us. Also, on the other side of this, we've got another entrepreneur in studio, Khotso, who's also going to join us for the debate as well. And I think he's going to have some quite interesting things. I think today's debate is going to get heated, because now we're going to talk about, is the government doing enough for young black South Africans? Is the government doing enough for us to be commercially viable in this economy? Also, we're going to chat about, where is Africa going? Where is the youth going? Is there hope for us? Is it the end for us? You know, our economy was ranked junk status last year. You know, schools in South Africa are still quite underdeveloped when it comes to technology. So we're just going to break that down a little bit on the other side of this.
smoking, I'm down the bedroom. 25 bricks in the yard, edible. I'm the big dog on the high pedestal. Bow-legged coupe, cool. Miller in the roof. Yeah. Bitch got the juice. I know you feel me, masseuse. You feel me. You rock me, I kill you with truce. Pointers on my neck, Bruce Bruce. Great digger on and off on mute. Great. You too cute, give me mouth and you lose. Too cute. Better watch your bitch, you want the groove.
You're live on Cliff Central with Siyabonga Bile on the Threaded Exchange. Conversations that are cultured, conversations that are brave, conversations that are progressive. We're live from Johannesburg in South Africa in the Cliff Central studios, and we're live from Cliff Central to Africa, to the world. This is young black people owning it, killing it, black excellence, black magic, melanin boys, everything, all of the above. We're also now joined by Khotso. Khotso, what's up, man?
Good in yourself, man.
I'm good. You're also a young black entrepreneur, but you are a designer. Tell us a bit about yourself in 30 seconds.
Oh, might be a long story, but I'll cut it short. Look, I'm a kid from a small township in the East Rand called Watville. Self-taught designer, I make shoes, I make everything that I can make. So yeah, that's me, man.
Yeah. Also, do you think entrepreneurship is tough?
Man, super tough. Yes. Anywhere in the world, it's super tough, man.
Let's start this debate. Is South Africa the place to be as a young black entrepreneur? Let's start with you, Joe, walking all the way down to Khotso. What do you think for us to be in this country right now? Is that a good idea as an entrepreneur?
Look, I'm very passionate about being African. You know, I'm passionate about owning our history, our stories, and I believe that Africa is the answer to a lot of things in the world. We've had a difficult time to actually get where we are right now, but I feel that it has opened up for business a lot. Besides the fact that a lot of people come into the country to actually do business from here, I feel that this is prime time and Africa is in the right direction, because like we have access to information that a few years ago we didn't have, a few years ago that our forefathers and parents did not have. You know, like my mom still doesn't know what I do for a living. It just tells you that we've evolved so much to a point where young millennials like us are able to create things and make them exist. So I believe that this is the perfect time and we are in the right place at the right time. It just comes down to what do we make of it.
Khotso, let's jump to you.
Well, with me, I'd say it's hard, but it's a good thing. It kind of grooms you to be the best that you can. Like me coming from a small hood, I didn't have much resources. Everything I had to do and learn on my own, you know. So it's a good thing, but how long is it going to be? A young kid like... Even with me, young kids want to be like me, want to make shoes, want to make everything. But it's kind of hard at times to tell them, no, you have to go out, because you tell them to go out, where should they go? You know, so for me, it's kind of that situation. But yeah.
Yeah. Elliot, you coming from Soweto and coming out to build a business, what is that like for you? And I mean, going back to my question, do you think being a businessman in South Africa right now as a young person is commercially viable?
Yeah, I'll say this is the best time for a young person to come out and start something. There was this one lady told me that is, you know, if we can create more places, more places like Hook Up Dinner in Soweto, that's when you invite young people, young entrepreneurs, and they'll teach them more about business and stuff. You will find that this is the place to start, you know, because we don't have things like that. You get a post that says you must come to a hookup dinner and someone can't even afford to go there. No. Yeah. And that person needs to know more about business. And so I think if we can just push that more, we will see that we're in the right continent. Yeah. And this is the right time for us.
Yeah. Anga, my younger brother, You're 20 years old right now.
Yeah.
You've seen me, you know, try build my business or build my business.
Yeah, lose it, build it again.
Yeah. Yeah. You have your own, you know, startup as well called Friends, which works in the music space. Mm. Now, looking at all these or living my experience, you know, being my brother, do you think you're as optimistic in running your business as you were before you knew what it took?
I think, to be honest, I think it would be the same like wherever you were in the world. I think just being an entrepreneur is very hard. It takes a lot of guts. So I feel like a lot of people have unrealistic expectations when they start a business. I think you can't expect to make money like in your first like couple months or years. Like it that's literally what it does. Like you're gonna be broke for a long time. It's like Coachella didn't make a profit for like 10 years. And that's the biggest music festival in the world.
Exactly.
So
phones off. Sorry about that.
So I think obviously the country we live in, I think just in Africa in general, obviously when it comes to economic situations, like we are not, you know, we're not in the best place, I think, but Africa, like you said, is the answer to a lot of things. Like a lot of questions, I think Africa is the answer. So I think I encourage every African young millennial, young person to like do something, start something. And that's all you have to do is just start. I mean, obviously, the only way things are going to change is if we keep driving conversations like this and a lot of us keep making things happen. So Joe and Elliot doing something, and then obviously like younger than them, I'm coming up and I have questions to ask them. They'll be like, yo, listen, you're going to struggle with this, but this is what I did to get over it.
Yeah.
Then I can take those lessons and apply them to myself, and maybe I'll come up with a solution that's three times better than the solution they came up with.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be up to us. We're going to have to fall. We're going to have to make mistakes. We're going to have to stumble. But I think you guys, like yourself, Elliot, just the entrepreneurs that are really doing, like really doing crazy stuff, are the ones that are going to have to like really captain the ship. Like it's up to you guys. Like we can't rely on the Mitsepes and the older people to do it for us.
And it's, I think one thing I really love about entrepreneurship in Africa is that there's a strong spirit of collaboration. A lot of entrepreneurs have started collaborating and understanding, hey, look, I might not have the resources and skills that you guys have, but if we can collaborate and form maybe a team of five businesses, we can pitch to get this one big pie. You know, I was invited to a talk sometime this month and I turned it down. Why? Because I don't want to be the guy who stands in front of other upcoming entrepreneurs and telling them like, this is what we achieved, this is our client and whatnot. Some of those people might not relate because, first of all, I don't even know the space that they are in their entrepreneurial journey. I'd rather have a round table where we sit and I tell them what I'm struggling with, you know, and they do the same. And we collaborate and we have this type of conversations where we can help each other out rather than saying, look, we did this, this is our client, whatnot. Because even that is still a false, because we haven't made it. People think you have, but we haven't. And we have a vision. We know where we're going. We're not there yet. But all this, we need to share.
Yeah. I just got an interesting question. I want to throw a spanner in the works, actually for you, Elliot and Khoto. We just got someone who's listened to the radio show, and they're saying the following. Don't see why you're talking about black excellence. Why not excellence amongst all races? Just don't see the point in branding black, as we are a rainbow nation. Get real, not racist. Do you have anything to say to that? And I think as young entrepreneurs, we're very pro black, and we're very pro, you know, taking people from our hoods and making them better. And most of the time we get criticized for that, as if, you know, celebrating black excellence means we're excluding
it's
white.
It's not anti-white.
It's not an anti-white campaign. No, so Elliot, what are your perspectives on that?
On my side, I won't say that we excluding everyone or different color, whatever. All I'm saying is that being an entrepreneur, it doesn't matter who you are, you understand? If you need help from starting a business, you can come to me. It doesn't matter if I'm black, Indian, or white, whatever. It's for everyone, you understand? This is our generation. This is our time to create something that belongs to us. It doesn't matter. This is our continent, you understand? So it doesn't, race doesn't matter at all when it comes to entrepreneurship, you understand? It's all about executing and helping each other to grow more.
Okay.
For me, coming from the township, I spend most of my life there. So I know what a problem, like a black a problem for a black kid is. So I'm gonna focus on that, you know, because I was raised looking at the township as it's like this. These are the problems, you know. I can't relate to a kid who's in suburb somewhere, you know. I'm gonna relate to a kid who's in my hood, who's in another hood, because I think we share the same problems in hoods, you know. So yeah, it's not about race, you know, it's about where we come from.
I also think, for me, like, I mean, let's get real for a second, let's not wash things under the carpet. I also think, like, majority of the country of people who are underprivileged are black people. You know, so when we say black excellence, it's not being anti-white, but it's recognizing that a huge majority of black people, not just in South Africa but in Africa as a whole and in the world, black people tend to fall at the bottom of the chain. And so we need to start building our own economies. I mean, half the time as black people, we're always talking about this white-owned magazine is not featuring a black person, or these platforms need more black people. And we need to shift away from that kind of thinking and start building our own black-owned platforms, so that we don't depend on those platforms to include us in a sense.
And also, I think, like, we need to stop being apologetic about saying pro-black.
Exactly.
Like, I don't understand how people can be like, no, like, but
people
like, we are Rainbow Nation. We understand we are Rainbow Nation. It's just that for hundreds of years, throughout history, all over the world, we have been in the positions that we are in.
Yeah,
like, this is not something that just happened today or yesterday. It's been happening for a long, long time. And I think now, when young people start saying pro-black and black excellence, that's just us taking ownership and taking action and saying, you know what, things need to change.
Exactly.
We can't just keep washing things under the carpet and saying, no, but we all are, you know, we're all in this together.
And also, and just sorry to cut you off, pushing black excellence is because We understand that the position we were in before did not just play with us on a financial level, but also on a mental level, right? And we trying to change other people's mentality around
how they see
can
themselves.
Can I achieve this? Because same thing as Edith was saying, like, we get a young kid who has been watching cartoons on TV his whole life, and he's been seeing different people of color, right? And maybe he's got the talent, and he's always wondered, how is this made? You know, there isn't like a way for him to get to be able to create that. And we want to change that, firstly by achieving things that we couldn't a few hundred years ago. And also just changing people's mentality around what people of color like us can achieve. Because there's certain things that we see and we experience and we're like, oh nah, this is not for me, I can't get there. It's all in the mind, you know. And that's where it begins.
Because nowadays, if you go to ECAS, even today, if you find a kid that's very talented and you tell that kid that you need to get out in your comfort zone and go to these certain schools, they will tell you, no, it's impossible for me to go there. And then you ask them why. They will tell you, no, it's because I can't afford. There's a lot of things, you know, there's a different race there. They will look at me in a different way, which is, we need to kill that. Today.
And I think black excellence is just like helping, or just like instilling like the, like this like conviction that you can see yourself as excellent. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. Like, white people have been seeing themselves like that for years. Like, little kids, like young kids, like young white kids are told to go out and follow their dreams and do these things, and they're amazing. And it's just like, why is it a problem if we are saying the same thing? We're saying, 16-year-old Tepo, you are the essence of black excellence. You are an excellent person. You can do a lot of amazing things.
I also think, fundamentally, to summarize what you guys are saying in this part, is that already the world is white excellence. All the movies in the world, if you go to a cinema right now, tell me which movie, just count amount of black actors you see on those advertising billboards. If you open the TV, if you watch global sports, if you watch anything in the world, the system is still run by
and
white people.
I see the black people still playing the same role.
And so, looking back, back home into South Africa, is that what apartheid did to us so badly was not affect us, not only in terms of the spaces we live in, but it actually killed us in our minds. And I like to believe we have the poverty of the mind. And the poverty of the mind has taken away that confidence that we have. You know, for us to say we're the best at something is a lot, because we're afraid of being arrogant. We're afraid of being thrown out the room. But I mean, Cristiano Ronaldo will tell you, I'm the best soccer player in the world. Messi will say, I'm the best soccer player in the world. You know, people like, why people always proclaim in these arenas that they are the best. And when a black person does it, it's provocative. And we see an example like that with Kanye West. With Kanye West, I'm the best musician to be alive. And people are like, no. He must be humble. He's like, I miss the old Kanye. He used to be humble. But then like,
Paul McCartney can say,
yeah, I'm the best ever. And everyone's gonna be like, oh, the Beatles. You know what I'm saying? Like,
God.
We give all these titles and things, and then as black people, when we take ownership of saying, you know what, I am the best because I work really hard and I feel that I am, it's a problem. And also, being the best is subject to who you are.
True.
You know, for example, when we argue about Messi, you can say Cristiano Ronaldo is the best soccer player in the world because he's the highest paid. We can say Lionel Messi is the best soccer player in the world because of the stats that he produces. I can say that I'm the best fashion person in the world because of the threaded man, because that's what it means to me, and I feel like I'm building something important. And even as black people, when another black person says they are the best, we are quick to be the ones judging, to criticize.
That's where it begins, eh? I think also it begins, like, we've been conditioned in such a way that actually begins within our societies, within our homes. Like, let's say you've got an older brother who's maybe a lawyer and he's making the big bucks, and you're a creative, you want to be a fashion designer. Like, your mom would be like, hey, why can't you be like your brother? You know, he's making it, he's in the corporate space and stuff like that. So I think it begins with us, and I'm happy that has been changing. Like I said earlier, that we collaborating, we understanding that, hey, look, if Sia is right, like, on level 3 and I'm on level 1, he can pick me up to level 3, you know, and
together we can go to level 4,
we can move forward. And like, black excellence is just about instilling that spirit, instilling that confidence, and saying, look, you can achieve this irrespective of your situation, irrespective of your background and all of that.
I mean, it starts in your society. Like, as Joe's saying, you see, you find at home, they want you to be a lawyer, to be a policeman or teacher. Where else, there's more things that you can do, understand? So if we're going to limit ourselves and have that thing, you see, I don't belong in that space, you know. It's not my space. Already your mind, it's dead. No, you're not gonna go anywhere. Understand? So, like, one day my granny was asking me, like, what do you do at school? Like, I do animation. She was like, what's that? I was like, I'm a Popeye. And then I was like, you taking my daughter's money and wasted business now, and I'm a Popeye. You understand such things, but like
thing is cut in it, like, born okay, obviously most was like the typical child being a nurse or teacher or whatever. And in most cases in my school are like, this is the seasons are it's bougie to
exactly.
So I relate to
it's
that.
Judged. It's very judged.
So it starts easy as people that we, you know what, I'm free to do everything, anywhere, you know. Don't be afraid to take risk. You need to risk each and every day.
No, guys, this is an interesting debate, and we have a lot of requests coming in. Guys, please don't hesitate to contact us on 079-748-82090. That's on WhatsApp. You can message us and tell us what you think about this debate. Do you agree? Do you disagree? What are your challenges that you're facing? What are your issues that you're facing in your business? I'm going to play another song, and this song is called Drake, Diplomatic Community. I think today I'm inspired by the entrepreneurs in the room. You know, after you've lost so much as an entrepreneur, you also get into this attitude, you're like, hey, I don't give a fuck,
like,
now.
Just
no,
a monster.
I'm a monster now. No one can stop me. So I'm gonna play this track. This is Drake, Diplomatic Community.
Shit is nice, but I prefer Madeo. Calamari rings and tomato. I got the sauce, and now shorties keep claiming Prego. Waking up at 6 p.m. like, where does the day go? Forecasting tornadoes, brainstorming retaliation at dinner tables. 2010 was when I lost my halo. 2017 I lost a J-Lo. A Rotterdam trip had me on front page though.
2017 I lost a J-Lo. That is Drake.
Me too.
Diplomatic Immunity. Fuck him. How are you guys feeling? This is a heated debate. A lot of people are moved.
It's crazy. I just got a WhatsApp text saying, please be controversial.
We shall be.
I don't want to be controversial for the sake of being controversial. You know what I'm saying? Like, exactly. I want to be controversial through speaking the truth.
Truth.
And even sometimes, like, I remember last year, people are like, I'm such a controversial figure. And I'm like, what do you mean I'm controversial? Yeah. Like, just Trump is controversial. Yeah. I just speak the truth and my experiences. Guys, let's dive in deeper. Let's dive in a bit deeper. Like, guys, as you all know, I would like to use myself as a prime example because it sets the tone, you know, it makes it all equal. Last year, I had issues where it was in the media, Sia didn't pay the models, Sia's going broke, Sia's dying, Sia's this. And in all honesty, I mean, I just did last week in a Huffington Post interview where I spoke about the challenges that I faced in running my business, where I had cash flow issues, where I lost money, made bad decisions. Those happen as well. We make mistakes as entrepreneurs. And I remember like how I was being dragged on Twitter, like Sia is a failure. You know, why did he start a business? Sia is a fraud. Sia is that. And looking in hindsight at that is that it just shows for me the epitome of the times we live in where, you know, as young black people who are trying to build things, of course we're going to fail and of course we're going to struggle. Mm. But then instead of being uplifted or being helped or people asking, yo, what's up? Yeah. I just realized that most people that were criticizing me were black people. You know, and even in my social circles, like some of, you know, people that I know who are not necessarily my friends who are black were like, yo, what's going on? Is this true? Yo, Spice on Twitter. My white friends were very like, yo, dude, like, why? What are they talking about? In running a business, there's failures, there's mistakes. You just have to bounce back up.
It's going
to
happen.
And I remember it taught me quite a little bit because my white friends, on the other hand, are like, dude, this is chill. This is business. We've been through worse. We've lost millions of people's money. Then on the other hand, I've got my black friends who are like, yeah, maybe you should quit. Maybe you shouldn't do this. Maybe it's not going to work out.
Yeah.
Why do you think we're so afraid of failure? Why is it that when we see it also every day with Bonang, with Somizi, when they make a mistake, let's say in a book, for example, Bonang's book, A to B, there were grammatical errors in the book, apparently. So Mizi apparently broke uJorge on Idols. He was being criticized for his accent. And like, English is not their first language. I'm not saying we shouldn't aspire to perform at extreme high levels. Of course, excellence is very important and things should be done properly. But when it isn't done properly, why is it that as black people we're the first to criticize?
I think black people actually like being successful and making money is still like new to a lot of black people. Like, I think it's like, I think we're not used to it. Like, and that's just facts. So seeing someone sort of achieve and do all these amazing things and make money and be able to take care of your family while you can't, I think for a lot of people is very heartbreaking. So it just goes back to the way we were like conditioned, like, you know, growing up. I think, bro, you know how we grew up. So it's like when you were like, you know what, I don't want, because Sia was going to be a politician. That was his thing, apparently. Like, he was going to be president. He was like prefect.
That's all what my wife, no, that's all my wife friends at school would say. Yeah, going to politics. You should be the next Nelson Mandela. I'm like, wow.
And that's what our mother thought, and our grandmother and our father. That was Sia's like thing. Like, that's where he was going. He wasn't going to change. And then he was like, you know what, I actually want to do fashion. I mean, that was a shock. My mom was like, huh? Yeah. Fashion.
Routine.
So I think it just comes back to the fact that, you know, I don't blame my parents for thinking the way that they do.
Yeah.
I think it's just that economic situations has forced us to sort of go for the well-known type of jobs, the ones that they know about, like lawyer, doctor. And that makes sense because that's the time they were conditioned in. But times have changed. So a seer can exist with our little brother who wants to be a lawyer. They can exist in the same space. Sia can be a fashion designer, creative guy and make money and be successful, and our little brother can just be a lawyer and make money and be successful. So I think it's just that we are not conditioned to see that all of these can coexist in one. We only just see the one that we used to.
Yeah. So you're saying it's a blind spot factor.
It's
what
a
do
blind
you think,
spot
Joe?
Factor.
That's an interesting perspective, but
I
let me hear
think
what Joe says.
That people are always going to say shit. Either you're doing good or you're doing bad.
Yeah.
You know? So you just need to keep doing what you do. I mean, also just being in the public eye, you're more vulnerable to criticism because your work is out there and your work is you just already being vulnerable. Like an artist, if I paint and I post it up, criticizing that work as a creative, I feel like it's a personal attack on me because I'm attached to it. Like what you see there on that canvas is me in the most vulnerable form you can find. So everyone that does great work and just publicly puts it out there is prone to criticism, and you need to understand that there are some people that are going to criticize you to actually improve and build you, and there's other people that just don't want to see you reach a certain space or level in your life.
What's been the worst criticism you guys have received of creative mind space?
The worst one was when we moved to Sentin. Everyone was in our case that we staying sent in, we're making money, we don't talk to them anymore, we acting different.
It is new, they've changed. You know?
Yeah.
And it's not like that.
It's the same thing I was saying, see, me and Joe, we took a risk, a big one, you understand? We told ourselves, you know what, Joe, we don't have clients in town. Let's go to sent in. We asked ourselves, how are we gonna fund this? You know, understand? We're like, no, let's just go.
Let's use our sense and let's go.
You understand? We lived, and everyone was like, shit.
Also, just sorry, touching up on that, it's most of the people that criticize your work are people that probably you've known for a long time or have been within your circle, and you've almost outgrown them, not because you chose to, but like you're like, where your headspace is different, and people that don't understand your vision or don't understand where you're going are always going to judge you.
Yeah. Also, being a designer, I mean, I think you and I can relate a bit more because a lot of our work requires for us to be public, and a lot of our work is public. How do you deal with it?
Well, with me, I see my work as global piece of art, you know, so it has to happen. It has to be criticized for me to grow, you know. So for me, it comes as if, you know, this person is telling me to go further with what I'm doing. So it's how I deal with it. And me coming from a family where I always had support, so I kind of knew that I had people supporting me and said to me, you're the best at what you do. So go ahead and do your best. So the outside world doesn't matter much, you know. So I'm doing this for family. It's what it is.
But how do you sift if something is being criticized or being hated at? Because I think sometimes those lines can be blurred, and sometimes people can say, "Yo, I'm criticizing you," but you can clearly see the energy that they're giving you is not that friendly type of energy.
I think having to do anything, you have to understand, you have to be thick-skinned. You have to have ways to deal with such energy, because it is energy, and energy doesn't die, it can be converted to something else. So
guys, we're running out of time, we have to say goodbye, but Joe, before we go, I mean, Khotso and Creative Minds, you guys have to punch yourselves. Joe, where can people find you guys? If people wanted your services right now, how do they get in touch with you?
Okay, so we're currently revamping our site, so that's off the books, but you can find us on Instagram, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook. The handle is @CMindSpace. So that's @CMINDSPACE. My personal is Joe Nawaya. You can connect there. And
He's speaking for both. And I also say these guys just built my new website, siabila.com, which launched yesterday. So yeah, Joe,
crazy.
Great job. Crazy. Everybody is saying props.
It was Khotso.
Well, anyone is looking to see what I do and my business, whatever, go to Instagram, I'm your official, DM us if you see something you like, DM me, and make it happen.
And I'm also going to say, next month, I think end of February, I might be going to Paris for Fashion Week.
You're
one of the designers working with me, and you and I are doing some crazy, exciting stuff, man. Look out. Next couple of weeks, you'll start seeing me rock some new local dope, local but global jiggy pieces, and Khotso will be one of the designers. Guys, thank you so much for bringing me. I think this is a debate that was really, really dope. I wish we could have dived in more deeper.
Yeah.
And Anga, any last words? Actually, at the end of each show, I want to do words of motivation. Anga, give us the word of motivation for this Tuesday.
Like motivation or just like a wise saying?
A wise saying, motivation, whatever you want to tell the world. We're running out of time.
Only trust people when they're sleeping.
only trust people when they're sleeping. That is a heavy statement. But yeah, he's saying only trust people when they're sleeping. And I think in business, I've learned that the hard way, where people promise you things, you forget contracts. So trust is on paper. If someone wants to prove you they trust you, they must show it through the paperwork. Guys, thank you so much for joining us. This is The Thread Exchange with Siyabile. And also, don't forget to tweet us at The Thread Exchange. I'm Twitter page. You can tweet Cliff Central. You can send also requests. And we'll be back next week, same time, same place. I'm Siyabile, signing out.
This is CliffCentral.com.